Welcome to Roamcast 4 with my Thursday co-host, Oz. Oz, what do you have for us today?
Hi, Father. I am excited about reading about one of the saints of the day, which is Saint Ubaldus. I think he passed 1160 Anno Domini, of course. And what really touched me was that this bishop of Gubbio, Italy, was so courageous that when there were some rioting in the streets of his city, he will throw himself between the factions that were fighting. And as soon as they saw him, they will lay down their arms at once. And this was for fearing wounding their bishop, you know. And for me, I said, hey, what a courageous guy. And then to mind came a bishop that I understand was in Miami, Florida, called Bishop Agustin Roman, that in 1986, he was called to intervene and end the crisis in a maximum security prison in Atlanta, Georgia. Of course, trying to end it without any loss of blood from both sides, the federal authorities and the Marielitos. And he actually, I understand that he asked for a golf cart. Somebody drove the golf cart, and he grabbed a megaphone and started praying the Holy Rosary out loud through the megaphone, of course. And my understanding is that all those prisoners that were extremely, extremely violent dropped all their weapons, and the rioting ended up, which was something that not even the federal authorities did it with their arms. He did it with the rosary and the courage to go in, because, I mean, he could have been killed himself. My understanding is through some information that I got from his secretary, that the federal government gave him a plaque, and the plaque consisted of one of the homemade, unquote, right, quote unquote, homemade knives that these violent criminals had, that were one of the weapons they threw on the floor instead of continuing the attack and the rioting in the federal penitentiary. So for me, those two stories, you know, which you hear it from the 1100, and then you hear it in the 20th century, you go, man,
yeah,
a courageous example to the rest of us.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we know that theologically the episcopacy is the fullness of the priesthood. So there's almost something that is just intuitional in the people that knows that their bishop, if he's going to be that shepherd with a strong voice, they actually will follow him. And I like that you connect the 12th century to something that happened in the 1980s, that when, you know, people aren't going to remember a bishop for a letter he wrote, but here we are talking 30 years later about one who went into a prison riot and calmed a prison riot. That was actually the reading, what was it, 2 weeks ago, the Good Shepherd reading in the traditional Latin Mass. They recognized his voice. And here you have, I think you told me offline, there were a bunch of, was it Cuban refugees who were held in that Atlanta prison?
Correct. They were called Marielitos. Well, they were apparently, what I hear in the law enforcement communities, that they were extremely, extremely violent. They were the ones that Fidel Castro released, and they were, you know, very extremely violent. And for my surprise, I understand that the bishop was received or the recognition of being ABC News Person of the Week.
Well, we're having a little trouble just connecting here, so I'll just jump into my story. I'm actually on the road, and for any listeners who are worried, I don't actually have any recording equipment for this podcast. I can actually drive with just my iPhone and earbuds, and so it's not dangerous. It's just a phone call, and I'm actually driving out to see my grandma because she's dying, and she's 103, just a few weeks short of 104. She's actually born in June, the same day that I have a niece born. My niece was born 100 years to the day after my grandma, so her great-grandmother, she shares her middle name. And I just want to tell you a little bit about my grandma's conversion. She actually, her parents came from Germany, so her first language growing up in Illinois was actually German, maybe for the first few years, and then quickly switched to English. But she was raised a Protestant, and she met my grandpa, who was a good Catholic, actually. And this was in the 1940s. They got the dispensation for, I think, what's called a mixed marriage. I always get that mixed up with someone who isn't baptized. But she was a baptized, I think she was a Lutheran or something like that. And it was a little bit more rare to give a dispensation back then to marry a non-Catholic, but the bishop in Illinois in the 1940s gave my grandfather a dispensation to marry my grandmother. Well, sometime in the courting period or engagement period or maybe even early years of marriage, sometime when they were getting to know each other, she decided to become Catholic, but she decided not to tell him. So she secretly started taking instruction. I think this is before they called it RCIA. So she was taking RCIA classes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Father.
So she's taken RCIA class. So my grandma decided not to tell my grandfather that she was actually converting. And so she went to all instruction and made her first confession. And then one Sunday Mass, she would always go to Sunday Mass with him, of course, but she would not receive Holy Communion because, of course, these were before these days of what they call open communion, these experiments with Protestants and everything else. And so this is the 1940s, so of course it's only the traditional Latin Mass. So he goes up to receive Holy Communion, and she comes up to him this one Sunday and kneels right next to him and receives Holy Communion. And so they go back to their pews, and he says, "What are you doing?" You know, he's just horrified. He didn't make a scene, but he was a little bit shocked. I said, "What are you doing?" And she just whispered, "I secretly became Catholic without telling you, and I am a Catholic now." And so those two sat making their Thanksgiving somewhere like a year into their first year of marriage. And I'm sure he was just absolutely delighted that she had become Catholic at that point. And I think one thing to see on this conversion is just that for the Catholic Church, rules are important in a conversion. And my grandma had to follow the rules of the Catholic Church in becoming Catholic, instead of like this whole idea of like open communion. My friend always says rules without relationship leads to rebellion, and he means rules without a relationship with Christ leads to rebellion. But I think this story with my grandma also shows that a relationship without rules leads to surrender without context. And surrender without content is essentially it's we love Jesus, and isn't it great we love Jesus, but we have no idea how to please him or really what he wants from us. And, you know, as we heard recently in Catholic News, this stupid idea of divorcing evangelization from doctrine. Well, my grandma wouldn't be Catholic if there were no rules for her to follow. I wouldn't be driving out to give her the last rites, like from that book, actually, that I read from in one of our first Rome casts there. She wouldn't be getting last rites from me if she hadn't had to follow the rules to become Catholic. And so it's interesting that rules are actually like part of evangelization. If Jansenism, that heresy of Jansenism, the doubt of the mercy of God, if Jansenism is putting the bar too high in Catholicism, then this idea of no rules is putting the bar too low. And you know what? Nobody wants to join a loser's club. That's what it means when you have the bar too low. Is it the loser's club? But when you have the bar at a high level, not so high that we would call it Jansenism, but when there's a high bar, people actually want to become Catholic. When we just present Catholicism like we keep hearing from numerous high-profile people, which is basically Unitarian Universalism, everyone saved, open communion, no one's ever going to become Catholic. But because of the rules actually played a big part in my grandma's conversion.
Amen.
This is The Life of the Blessed Virgin Mary by St. Maximus the Confessor, 7th century Doctor of the Church, translated by Shoemaker. Here we're in section 14, and Mary is growing up in the temple. And after a little while, when she was nearing 12 years old, there was a precursor and foreshadowing of her Annunciation. She was adorned with all wisdom and righteousness, with fasting and prayer, with humility and tranquility, with fear and love of God. One day at midnight, she was standing right in front of the doors of the sanctuary and offering prayers and supplications to God with a merciful and holy heart. Then behold, a great event and tremendous to hear, a great light shone forth in the temple, so brilliant that in it the brightness of the visible sun became small and dark. And she heard a voice from the sanctuary that said, "Mary, from you my son will be born." When the Blessed Mary heard this, neither was she frightened or afraid on account of her youth, nor did she become proud from excessive joy. And she did not tell anyone else, nor did any change occur in her behavior or thinking, but she was amazed at the utterance, as was appropriate. Nevertheless, she concealed in her heart this truly great mystery that was ordained before the ages and unknown even to the angels, until she saw the fulfillment of the providential mysteries in her, when Christ the King was born from her, and he carried out the divine economy of his life among human beings, and he rose from the dead and ascended into heaven. Number 15. After this, the Holy Virgin reached a greater age, and she became 12 years old, which she was. After this, the Holy Virgin reached a greater age, and she became 12 years old, which was the time of marriage according to the rule of the law. Nevertheless, the priests were not able to carry this out on account of her dedication, for they were afraid to expel from the temple this one who had been an offering to God, because it seemed abominable to give over to the yoke of marriage one who had been entrusted to God, who had been ordained to be in service to the yoke of God alone. But the rule of the law of Moses also prohibited a young woman who had reached this age from being continually present in the temple. There was then much consideration among them considering this matter, in order to determine what was best. Then God sent into their hearts a legitimate and suitable idea that would fulfill the rule of the law and avoid marriage, and they decided to hand her over in betrothal, but not in marriage. When the priests were making this deliberation, they did not trust themselves to select such a godly man, but they assigned everything to the providence of God, as Moses did before when many were contending for the office of the high priesthood. He entrusted the judgment of this matter to God, and he brought the rods of the tribes into the tabernacle, and by them made known the will of God through the flowering of the rod. Numbers 17:8. And again, later on, Peter and the other apostles found the one who filled the traitor's place through prayer and casting of lots. Acts 1:26. So also then, the high priest and the priests stood in prayer and supplication to God at the instruction of the great Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, who held the office of the high priesthood at that time. And he was a witness to the godly life and the incomprehensible ministry that were fulfilled by the most blessed Virgin. When she was living in the temple, Zechariah was a relative of the Holy Virgin, not only because he was from the same tribe on account of the union of the royal and priestly tribes, but also through his wife Elizabeth, not only because it is indicated by other writings that Mary and Elizabeth were the children of two sisters, but the words of the archangel also confirm it, as it is written in the Holy Gospel, "And behold your kinswoman Elizabeth," Luke 1:26. So at that time, God placed an idea in Zechariah's mind, and he took 12 rods of elderly and honorable old men who were related to the Holy Virgin, and he placed them in the sanctuary of the temple. And he himself stood with the other priests in prayer and supplication to God with ardent tears, and they asked to be persuaded by a miracle that it is appropriate for someone to receive the Virgin. The Lord gave an excellent sign, and Joseph's rod blossomed and became fruitful as Aaron's before it. And so by the providence of God, and by the deliberation of the priests, Joseph received from Zechariah the Immaculate Virgin as a guardian and her caregiver and a servant of the mystery that is great and wonderful beyond all comprehension. Thanks for joining us on Padre Peregrino's Romecast number 4.